as I went ahead and broached this subject on the first day of Unleavened Bread over in Grafton with the United Church, touching some high points and laying down some premises with regard to this topic of anger, I wanted to resume some detail with regards to this bit of leaven in our lives. And we can certainly, as I attempted to try to lay down the premise, that we are going to be entering into a metaphor, a count. It's going to commence next Sunday, after this week, actually tomorrow. Yeah, tomorrow it's going to commence. And as a result of that, we are going to be entering into the metaphor that tethers Pentecost to Passover and the resurrection of the first of the first fruits, the wave sheaf, the validation of Christ, and all the things that go along with it. From Passover to Pentecost is indeed connected. It is a block, and it has deep, rich meaning from the beginning of establishing the death of Christ, of which all of God's truth and cost of salvation and the methodology related to salvation is built from, to the ultimate picturesque metaphor of the holy day of Pentecost, that is, of course, the birthday of the church. It, of course, illustrates that the Holy Spirit was made available now on a broader scale. We've got all that 2020, but it is also a celebration of the first of the first fruits resurrection. You see, there's a lot of metaphors in there. There's a lot of overlay of meaning, of deep, rich value for all of us to be able to extrapolate from, to have a better comprehension of what God is, in fact, doing. And so it comes down to this, and that is, of course, that we as Christians, as Greg Thomas pointed out, and I thought it was a nice parlay of information off of what I had presented, and he presenting a total picture of the fact that we as Christians today, in our lifetime of 70, as pointed out in Psalms 90, that we are indeed mandated, expected to grow, to bring forth fruit. If we're not bringing forth fruit, exemplary of Jesus Christ, what his standards are, his values, what he represents, then guess what? We're fooling ourselves. If we're just sitting here, warm in a seat, we're fooling ourselves. And so I appealed, as Greg Thomas appealed, to the fact that we need to bear down. We need to focus, zero in, laser beam sharp, and start addressing what we have in terms of areas of improvement. I picked anger, going back to the first day of Unleavened Bread. And so I want to pick up, we're going to use our handy dandy whiteboard here, anger. Anger is going to be the topic that we're going to kind of outline and dissect a little bit, to the point where hopefully we can begin to understand what I'm kind of talking about in terms of really going ahead and bearing down on essentially a problem that all of us suffer from in one degree or another. We all have anger issues, whether they be overt or covert, because not all anger is expressed. A lot of people hold it in, let it simmer, let it cook, let it build, like a pressure cooker in some respects. And we'll get into some of the essentials of how some of the covert manifestations of anger play out in the scheme of things. But I want you to understand something in regards to anger, and that is, in many respects, anger is an intense emotional reaction. And it can come out And it can stay in. Overtly, covertly. And it can, nevertheless, be troublesome in some cases, depending on how it does indeed manifest itself. But I want you to understand something. Anger is not a disease. It's not a disease. As a matter of fact, it's often manifested very naturally in a baby, isn't it? Right from birth. I'm hungry. You know, my diaper's dirty. Leave me alone, I'm irritated. I'm tired. I mean, and they don't even know how to talk yet, let alone walk. And they're angry already. Right? And you know they're angry. And mom and dad, they get in touch with a lot of this anger that's being expressed. And consequently, it does indeed show and illustrate that if nothing else, it is indeed something that is, you know, in us. Almost, you could say, from birth. So what is anger? Anger basically is an emotional my spelling here. Maybe I should get a spelling king here. Don't have to spell dots. It's an emotional processing challenge. Because anger is made up of some things. We're going to get into that. And what I'm asking all of us to do today is begin, don't think about your wives, don't think about your kids, don't think about your dads, don't think about your moms, your grandparents. Think about you. I want you to think about you. Make this personal. Make this personal. Today we're talking about the leaven in us. It's not the leaven in me. I got my own anger issues. I'm trying just like the rest of us. You got your own anger issues. You're trying. So let's try to understand this little crumb of leaven, this little nuance, because this is what I'm talking about. That's what the days of unleavened bread are all about. Examine thyself. Where's the leaven in your life? Don't just warm a chair. Don't just read a book. Don't just read the words. Get serious. Get proactive. Get really involved and bear down in, okay, I've got this problem. Every time you say this, I react this way. Why am I reacting that way? It's time to change, you know? I'm 30 years old now, or I'm 35 years old, or my kids are gone. I've got an empty house. They're not little kids anymore. Why do I act this? The dynamics of my life have changed so much. Why am I still doing these things? I'm asking you to ask yourself these things and to put yourself in the spotlight, because anger itself is very emotionally key operative, emotionally explosive. Why? Because it comes from feelings. And don't think feelings aren't real. You've got a whole transgender community today claiming they feel a certain way and are driven to be confused about the bathroom to use. And where is that derived from? It's not cognitive, because cognitive would say, I'm a boy, I'm a girl. But if I feel a certain way, then guess what? Doesn't matter. And it becomes irrational. Now, let's overlay that on anger. Let's overlay that on anger, because it's really important that we do understand that, in fact, anger can be very emotional. I'm going to read a little section here from this book from the American Association of Christian Counselors, written by Dr. Cosgrove and edited by Dr. Gary Collins. And on page, I wanted to read this because this is, it made me giggle when I read this. And I figured, rather than try to say all of this, because there's so much here, I wanted to read it so that you could share perhaps in some of the humor, because I think all of us can identify with what actually Dr. Cosgrove is talking about with his own family. He actually is talking about his own family here in this particular case. He says, "My three young sons are model examples of what children are like in this regard." So, I'm talking about anger. "So much so that when my wife and I stop to consider the things that make us angry, we believe our children's behavior would make good material for Bill Cosby comedy routines." So he goes on here and he says, "There are endless squabbles. He's touching me. I sat here first. Mom, he's looking at me. There is passing of gas in the bathtub, burping in sequences during meals. There is a constant, I don't know, I didn't do it. He did it first. There are smelly, dirty socks under one kid's bed, or the time that the youngest was tricked into sitting on a whoopee cushion, and now he's hitting his brother because of it. There's the time when the hamster got loose, or when someone or everyone has missed the toilet again. But we suppose these things happen in everyone's home." And you get the picture. Total chaos, and if you have five, six kids, or two or three kids. I had two daughters. It was you know, when they were 3, 4 years old, they kept you hopping. They kept you hopping. And children have a tendency to do that. He goes on here and talks about how, you know, he comes home from work and his wife, of course, spent the day. She's at home, a mother. She's cooking, making the meal and so forth. And then the kids sit around the table and they start passing peas under the table, you know, and they've got this one pea. And then all of a sudden one got out of control and he hits the wife in the face. I mean, it's just a comedy of errors. But ultimately the wife explodes. Why? Because of the emotional event. What I want to suggest here, and that is to keep in mind, and the fact of it is that we can, in this particular case, let me say it this way. Yeah, let me just say it this way. So, with what I just said, can we control anger? Can we? Jaden says yes. Can we? Can we control anger? There you go. Absolutely. We can control anger. Yes. The answer is a big yes. We can control anger, but the question is, how do you do that? And what is it that we need to be aware of regarding anger that will help us to control it? Well, the fact of it is, anger is made up of three major areas. And I'm going to put it under here, I guess. Anger has three major components. For sake of time, I'm going to abbreviate that. I don't know what happened here to my... It has the component which we already know, the emotional component. And that, with that, runs the risk of being very irrational. If you let your emotions drive you, you can be very irrational and end up making a bad situation worse. But there's also a break or a point where you could break it. Cognitive, that's right. See, anger is made up of also the cognitive component. And the cognitive component is the balance that generates behavior?
Yes.
Behavior. But it happens so fast, it becomes a holistic experience, doesn't it? Depending on what, and remember on Monday I mentioned, anger comes from external sources. Something's the trigger. There's something that's going to be the trigger, whatever that trigger is. Depending on what the trigger is, the holistic experience of emotion, cognitive behavior occurs quickly, very quickly. And sometimes you can react out of emotion and end up skipping, thinking through, and just acting. And guess what? It may have been a mistake with what you did. And it may be something that you might end up having to regret for the rest of your life. Now, anger can cause a person to think they're sinning. I get angry, oh, I'm sinning. But the fact of it is, and here's where it can get dicey, it can cause you to sin, but anger itself, and we're going to go to some scriptures here in a moment, anger itself by itself is not a sin. And we have to understand that it's okay to be angry. Anger itself is not a sin. So for all intents and purposes, it is, you know, a misbehaving child, forgetting to do something, unfulfilled expectations can cause, of course, a lot of people to get angry, being victimized. You know, you got robbed, you got beat up, you went ahead and lost something, being in the wrong place at the wrong time. Why am I here? Why did I do that? Why did I make that decision? And you're angry. There's nothing wrong with that. Maybe you deserve to be angry from that standpoint. But the fact of it is that even though we may experience anger due to unfulfilled expectations and so on, over here in Ephesians chapter 4, and in verse 26, Paul says to the Ephesians, "Be you angry and sin not. Let not the sun go down on your wrath, and neither give place to the devil." Over here in Psalms 37, chapter 8. And did you notice it says, "Be not angry," in verse 26, be you angry, but don't sin. I want to emphasize that. I don't want to just read over. Be you angry. It's all right to be angry, but don't sin. We're going to talk about this here in a little bit, but let's turn over here to chapter 37, book of Psalms, real quick. Psalms 37. And in verse 8, we read, "Cease from anger, forsake wrath, fret not yourself any wise to do evil." All right. So we've got a separation here. Romans chapter 12, real quickly here. Romans chapter 12. Difference being, what do we do? What's the behavior that happens in this particular case? Here in chapter 12 and in verse 19, it says, "Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves." Avenge not yourselves. "But rather give place to your anger." In other words, do not be vengeful. Don't try to get vengeance. Give place, that is, give space with your anger, your wrath toward whatever this external source may be. And sometimes that's not as easy as it may sound. Nevertheless, the advice is, vengeance is the Lord's. And of course, we understand that He will repay, says the Lord. So what we're now already seeing is there are some defenses. I don't know why this thing works sometimes and doesn't work other times. There are some defenses that we now are actually seeing. And of course, one of them is to Let God handle it. Let it go. In other words, forgive. That's very important. And of course, depending on what the situation is, that may be easier said than done. But the reality of it is, the two items here under defenses are certainly appropriate and very pragmatic and practical and are good components to add to not allowing this to get out of hand. The third point, though, is right here. And this is a very important point that one needs to keep in mind, and that is this cognitive and I'm going to use it as a counterbalance. And why is that? Because I'm going to consider what the consequences are of what my behavior is going to be. So if I'm going through this, I'm emotionally aroused by virtue of whatever that outside influence was, I allow myself to think this through. I'm thinking with my head and not my heart. As much as I'd like to tear your head off, would that do me any good? Because if I do that, what does that do to me? What does that do to my family? What does that do to my pocketbook? What does that do to anything? What does it do to the person? What does it do to the situation, the object, my relationship? If I say something that I wish I wouldn't have said because really what's going on isn't really worth it. And at the end of the day, in a different set of circumstances, it might not be all that problematic. Yet nevertheless, we do sometimes forget that cognitive counterbalance. And consequently, we end up doing something that we regret and do something that we really shouldn't have done. Keep in mind, our emotions, our feelings, may not be as controlled as they should be due to certain sensitivities. I may have something in my background that in a real-life situation you're unaware of could be a trigger for me. But because of my sensitivities, you don't know that. And I say something, or you say something to me, and you just set me off. Now, it's important for me to figure out, and that's why I said at the beginning, why do I always act that way? Why am I sensitive? And analyze yourself. Look for that leaven. Where is that source, that trigger coming from? Why is that trigger actually causing you to act the way that you do? Because how we decide to act, that is under our control. Would you not agree? How you decide to behave is under your control. Now, whether you take time to decide is another story. You get my drift? Because guess what? You may not decide. You're triggered. You're on an emotional high. Adrenaline's flowing. You are upset. Your wife just burned a steak again. Really? You just let the dog out of the house again, and he's lost. He's out there, and I got to go look for him. Really? You didn't do this, and you should have done it. I've told you 10 times to do it. And now you're saying, you see what I'm saying? And putting things in perspective, are we really thinking these things through? How important is what I'm really upset over in the grand scheme of things? Really enough to cause me to really lose it, if you know what I'm saying. So It does. That is, how we take action really makes the difference. And get this, brethren. This is important. This is really important in the grand scheme of things. We are accountable, not the person who's the target of your anger. You are accountable for how you treat that person in your anger, regardless of how justified you feel between your own ears. Doesn't matter. You're held accountable. And the additional damage that you may do to whatever the situation may be, you're accountable for that damage. That's your lot to own. That's your conditions or collateral damage due to whatever was the source in bringing to the situation what caused you to be triggered. So it is important that we understand that, you know, as I said, we got to control this anger. And anger is a learned response. Each and every one of us grew up watching mom and dad as our examples. Mom and dad, our examples on how mom and dad handled anger. I will tell you, my mom was a wild woman. She was angry. My dad, in the grand scheme of things, looking back on it, 2020, was more of a pacifist. But guess what? The dominating example. And I grew up mad. Was I ever mad? I wanted to change the world, as they said, you know. Our friends, the people that we hang out with, maybe even our mates. Proverbs 22. The Bible says, verse 24, make no friendship with an angry man. Make no friendship with an angry person. And with a furious man, don't go with him. Don't go there. Let that person go. Why? Verse 25. Because lest you learn his ways and you become hooked. Or the noose gets around your neck and guess what? You become like him. And why is it that one rotten apple will spoil the whole bunch, but never one good apple will turn the other rotten apples good? I think the Bible is telling us something. That if you're hanging around with some really hot-headed, ill-mannered, unethical crooks, thieves, and robbers, stay away. Get away from them, lest you yourself become contaminated and their leaven influences you to pile on in the leaven you're already dealing with. And so your Bible is quite clear in this to just go ahead and stay away from that particular situation, because it doesn't really do you any good, because frankly, you will, and the word here, the Hebrew word also, can mean even trapped. And why is that? Because you don't learn the cognitive mechanisms to balance the concepts necessary to monitor and manage the behavior, because it's all about this. You made me feel bad, therefore I'm justified in making you feel worse. You're wrong, I'm right, and I'm going to make you pay for it. And so we take it on, and we make a bad situation worse. We make a bad situation worse, brethren. So anger has many different faces. And this is what I was talking about. Overt, I can pretty much tell a person when they're mad and they're expressing it. So I don't have too much trouble with the overt. If Wayne gets mad at me, I know he's mad at me. If Anson would get mad at me and express his anger, I'm sure I would know he's mad at me. I don't think any of us had too much of a problem in the overt category of knowing that person's mad at me. You know, when my boss didn't like what I did, I knew my boss was mad at me when I worked for other people. And it was just obvious. But it's this one. Oh, this one. That I call. The doc doesn't, but I do. I call this. The mask. Ha 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 ha, the mask. What you see is really not what you got. What you see is really not what you have. I hide behind the mask. Now, as I say, anger has many different faces, and that's now what I'm talking about primarily in this category. Feelings of irritation can be, sometimes just feelings can be the outside source that causes the anger. But the anger may not be manifested. The anger may just be underneath the grid, as they would say. Hatred. Sometimes if a person doesn't express their hatred toward me, it's hard for me to determine they really hate me. Because they're subtle. They're under the radar screen. They're like, you know, oh, how you doing, Stephen? You know. Oh, Beth, you're nice person. You know. And there's people like that. And I hope we're not that way. Because it does mask. It does mask. Temper outbursts can, of course, be easily recognized. Frustrations, pessimism. Sometimes you know a person really well. You can begin to be able to know when they're frustrated. You know them well. You know their body language, their eye contact. You know their temperament, you know, and things of this sort if you know them well enough. I think even, you know, certain ones of us that are close with each other, if there's a frustration, you know, immediately, you could say, well, you know, hey, Jacob, what's wrong? Something wrong, you know. And because the temperament's not there. It's not the way he normally is or the way she normally is. And so you can maybe in some cases be able to recognize this. But pessimistic outlooks, it can be, you know, pessimism can come from anger. That's off the radar screen. Low self-esteem can be also a cause of anger. Verbal and physical aggression, jealousies, competitiveness. People sometimes who are angry at other people, they'll get competitive with them. They'll never tell them that they're not liking them, but they'll compete with them. Try to outdo them. Do you ever meet a person where you're talking to them, you tell them a story, but they got to one-up you. They got to one-up you. You know why? Because I don't like you, and frankly, you're not going to get one on me. I'm going to trump you, no pun intended. And so it comes out in different forms, different fashions in this particular case. Stubbornness, argumentativeness, nonverbal. Did you ever see this? Unsociable. They just sit there. They look at everybody else. Well, that one's fat. That one's short. That one, look at the hair undo on that one. Wow, man, oh, shit. I'll tell you what. Can you believe that guy's wearing no shoes to church? Unbelievable. And these things go on, you know. And these are the masks of the covert angry person, the one who's under the radar screen, but doing all the observations, judgings, and criticisms even in this regard. Reclusive. Anger in general, brethren, anger in general is hostile to everyone. Anger in general is hostile to everyone and everything. And you have to recognize that so that one can begin to understand how to deal with it. Now, it does manifest itself. I've got a handout here for those of you who would like to take these. They're for your taking. And they list about 60 different masks of anger. 60 different masks of anger. I'll just read you a few. Begrudging. Beloathing. Holy cow, he won the lottery? Why didn't I win the lottery? You know, or nice job. Wow, what a car. It's better than mine. You can't have a better car than mine. You went to that place? Wow. Well, I'm going to have to go to another place. Begrudging. despise, abhor, give some grief, cranky, touchy, repulsed, annoyed. That's a good one. People walk around, they're always annoyed. They're always annoyed. Everything that you do, even when you're being nice, they're annoyed. Resentful, irritated, miffed, sarcastic. Oh, sarcasm, sarcastic. Did you ever watch that woman, Madoff, on MSNBC? The newswoman there? Not Madoff, Maddow. Maddow. Yeah, Maddow, not Madoff. Madoff was the guy that made off with $50 billion. But what's her first name, Maddow?
Rachel
Maddow. Yeah, that's an angry woman. She's so sarcastic, I sometimes can't even understand her sarcasm. But I listen to her anyway. I'll turn her on just to see what sarcastic discussion she's having to see if I could understand her for a change. But most of the time, I can't. But she's sarcastic, very sarcastic, testy, spiteful, vicious, moody. People that are moody. And where does moods come from? Moods come from that. I used to always kid my grandchildren when they were growing up, hormones, you know. Because as you're growing up, hormones have a tendency, and we are physiological beings. You're medicated? Guess what? Medication is going to cause some side effects, issues, perhaps. That's why sometimes, many times in counseling sessions, one of the first things out of my mouth is, are you medicated? So that I can better understand what I'm dealing with in talking to somebody if I'm being asked to counsel with them, so that I can understand the temperament and the potentialities of what I'm dealing with, and perhaps even what some of the manifestations of character and behavior that I'm seeing due to their medication. I had a woman one time that ate a whole styrofoam cup right in front of me while I'm talking to her. She ate the whole styrofoam cup right in front of me. She was medicated, not demon-possessed. And that's different, you see. And counselors need to be aware of those kinds of things. But nevertheless, he goes on here, and he says, he lists mad, griped, incensed, provoked, grouchy, jealous, jealousy. Ooh, that's another one that is kind of off the grid, but nevertheless is indeed part of the covert behavioral pattern of a person who is indeed angry. Now, anger can be good or bad, depending on how that's used. You know, anger can generate actually energy and motivation to where if you can verbalize something when you're angry, man, you can really swing a big stick if you're able to maintain a cognitive sense about you in your controlled emotional anger. And therein lies the ability to generate some behavior whereby a win-win situation may occur. Because guess what? It may very well be that not only the angry person, but the object of the anger may come to a mutual understanding, revelation, eureka moment, and the behavior will change. And all of a sudden, the problem is solved. The issue's resolved. The relationship's healed. Forgiveness then enters in. And the cognitive counterbalance approach worked. And it can, as long as we don't allow our emotions to run away with us. Now, there is an ABC of anger management. I didn't think I was going to get through this, but I'm going to try. A, B, C, and I'm just going to put AM, anger management, okay? For the sake of time. And the ABCs of anger management are very simply the activating experience. This is the experience, the source. We'll say source. The belief. And the consequence. And herein lies your fulcrum for anger management. What do you believe is the right thing to do in handling this emotional, holistic event you're about to go through? Because what's happening is you are in a major dynamic and you have consequences to deal with that are indeed going to happen based on what you believe through the cognitive mechanics of your thinking. Is it right for me to punch this guy? I believe it's right. So I think I'll just punch him, you know. Is it right for me to be vulgar with this individual? Is it right to me to just beat a dead dog, to kick a person when they're down? They've already admitted they're wrong, but I'm going to go at them and make them feel even more wrong because they deserve it, because I'm right, and so I'm justified in just driving this drill and drilling it home, you know. These are things, brethren, that we have to look at in terms of the total consequence and the total picture of it, because what happens is if we allow ourselves, that is, our cognitive thinking, to be skipped or to be used for justifying our position, which is just as bad, we can find ourselves doing this. Let me turn your attention over here to Hebrews chapter 12 for a moment. Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12. And I'm going to give you some words to show you some differences on how things can play out if you just think of different words and position your outlook and your disposition differently based on the word. Hebrews chapter 12 and in verse Hebrews chapter 12 and in verse 15, we read this: looking diligently, and the writer here is talking about you can read previous, you know, about chastening of God and of course a learning through the chastening and so on, and he's talking about how fathers would chasten their children for their own peace and so on. He goes down here to verse 14: follow peace with all men in holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord. Looking diligently, here's now the point, lest any man fall of, or fail, that is, of the grace of God. Lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. If a root of bitterness sets in you, no matter what, if that's the way you're thinking, if that's your belief, the consequence is going to be counterproductive. I'll tell you right now, counterproductive to what Jesus Christ wants from you. Because no way is Jesus Christ looking for you to fall into what you could say, as this Greek word can be translated into, acridity or acerbic, mordacious, pungent, caustic, sarcastic. That's what that word bitterness means. Root of just acidity resides in your personality. You become this sarcastic person that really people tend to kind of not like because you're always being what some would call maybe a smart aleck, you know, or a sassy type person. And that's what happens in these particular cases if we go unchecked. You have to watch, for instance, in this particular case, you may find that instead of being outraged, instead of being, instead of being indignant and outraged, which appeals to justice and defense, while disappointment avoids anger. Let me back up here for a minute because I'm a little bit disoriented with the time here, but the point that I want to make in this is that you need to change words that are indeed causing you to think along the lines of bitterness, resentment. These are all destroyers, and that's what I wanted to mention. Bitterness, resentment are destroyers. But if you change those words, and that's what I wanted to share, if you change those words to, for instance, indignation or outrage, or like in my case, I'm asked time and time again by my grandson, are you mad at me? No, I'm not mad at you. I'm disappointed. I'm dissatisfied. I'm, these other types of words, displeased. I'm discontented. But I'm not mad, see, because I'm thinking. Why would I be mad? I don't have to be mad. I can be disappointed. I can be indignant. I don't have to be bitter. I don't have to be mean. I don't have to be annoyed. I don't have to be caustic, sarcastic. I can be outraged. I can't believe I've told you 10 times. And then don't own it. Especially if the individual says, look, I'm sorry. Sorry I did it that way. So now am I mad? No, I'm disappointed. Didn't meet the deadline. Am I mad? No, I'm disappointed. I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed. And that's a different frame, you see. Using a different word to adjust to the situation to afford me a different behavior that affords a different consequence, because my belief now is not toward bitterness, it's not toward sarcasm, it's not toward annoyance or irritation, it's more of indignation. I'm outraged. I'm disappointed. Over here in Proverbs 16, and in verse 32, we read this. He that is slow to anger is better than the mighty. He that rules his spirit than he that takes a city. 19:11. The discretion of a man, I read this on Monday, the discretion or prudence of a man defers his anger. He's able to defer it. He's able to restrain it. He's able to hold it back, think it through, to be able to control the behavior and as a result the consequence because of his belief. It all works hand in hand, but brethren, we've got to discipline it because guess what? In the moment, it becomes a holistic experience that, boom, moves fast. Because when it comes up on you, and there you are in the circumstances, in the conditions, you don't have a whole lot of time to start breaking this stuff down. It's almost got to be natural response. It's got to be trained, learned response. How does that happen? Study. And understand, you represent Jesus Christ. You represent not yourself. You represent Jesus Christ. Would Jesus act that way to your wife or his wife? Would he act that way to the husband, the child, the dog, the cat, the friend, the boss, the co-worker, the fellow student, the boyfriend, the girlfriend? That's what we've got to understand. And then how does that process? How does that process? Because remember, anger is intense emotional reaction. It's not a disease. It's an emotional processing challenge. And here is the process. Cognitive behavior, the source, keep it in mind. The source, it's an emotional reaction to a source balanced by the belief that hopefully will regulate and provide you the control, the steering for the consequence that God is looking for in your life. God is looking for in your life. Even though you may have a certain idea that you believe firmly is true and right and should be adopted, nevertheless, how you lose tells a lot about a person. It's easy to win. It's easy to get the trophy. But how you lose really tells a lot about the character of a person. So keep that in mind, brethren. Keep that in mind very much. And here in the last one that I wanted to show here in Proverbs 14, verse 29, he that is slow to wrath is of great understanding. Why? Because you're controlling your emotions, and consequently now I can understand more clearly that, you know what, maybe I'm not as right as I was. I jumped off the handle here, but now that you tell me this and I'm open to the feedback that you're giving me, guess what? My behavior is different because it's not so much about winning and holding my position, justifying me and defending my role to be right so that you're wrong, because I can't stand it when I'm wrong. And I'm never wrong anyway. You see. So this all plays together in this anger management mode or model that we have here, which is so very, very important. And here's the point as we close this up. The choice is ours. The choice is definitely ours, that we can allow our feelings and emotions to be steered. We can control our anger. We can control it. It is possible. It is, as a matter of fact, the Bible says, control your anger. Give space to your anger. Be angry and don't sin. What's that all about? It's about controlling it. It's about anger management. It's about all the things that come along with, hopefully, steering to a consequence that is actually described over here in Ephesians chapter 4. And this is the objective. How do we get this into our families? How do we get this into the workplace? How do we get this into the world landscape of geopolitics? How do we get all the nations of the world to be able to get here? Ephesians chapter 4 and in verse 1, Paul says this, I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you that you walk worthy of the vocation wherewith you are called, with all lowliness and meekness, with long suffering, forbearing one another, that means being patient. We haven't even talked about patience, but that all is part of, I mean, we could go down the line here of what kind of guardrails, what kind of identity markers, what type of spiritual DNA is needed in order to balance the cognitive processing so that the emotional event, this holistic dynamic experience that is oftentimes a highly intense emotional reaction, is stopped, controlled, throttled, because patience is a major ingredient. Paul's saying here in verse 2, forbearing one another in love, in combination with, look at this, verse 3 now, endeavoring, that means aspiring, that means to be working toward. This is the initiative. This is the focus, the steering, the goal, the objective of what we're trying to aspire to and accomplish. And that is here, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit. I want to be able to tell my wife I love her when I've been married to her after 50 years, 60 years. I want to be able to still say I love you. I was reading some things on the internet the other day, and I've been noticing on some people were married 25 years and divorced, 30 years and got divorced, 15 years and got divorced. My, it happens. But if this was the objective, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace, how can we be more peaceful? How can we have a family that's more peaceful, that's looking out for each other, that has really got the best interest at heart for each individual? At work, I've got the back of my coworker. At work, I've got the back of my boss because I want him to look good. I'm here to make my boss look good. I'm here to do the job, make the company look good. How many of us have that servant attitude to where we're endeavoring, we're constantly trying to figure out how we can keep this unity of spirit in the bond of peace? If we had that, brethren, we'd have world peace. We'd have world peace. The problem is everybody's too selfish and everybody's too emotional and everybody's thinking negative cognitivity. How can I take advantage of you? How can I exploit you? Why do you think we have pedophiles? Why do you think we have nations that are just abusing the poor? Leaders in countries, especially in those third world areas of the world, who just continue to oppress the people that they have and exploit them, even to their deaths. That's the world we live in. For us who are on the road to a resurrection by virtue of the fact of extrapolating leaven out of your life by displacing it with the law of God and taking Christ in via the unleavened bread representation of 7 days, number of perfection, so that you are reminded constantly that all this is made possible by the Spirit of Christ in you, is an important reality to live with constantly in your mind and in front of your eyes. in everything that you think, everything that you say, and everything that you do. So brethren, all in all, when it all comes down to it, the choice is ours. Because guess what? Anger can be managed.